Hello, and welcome to another podcast conversation in our coronavirus series, A Resilient Response. I'm Lee Hatcher. Who would have thought a few months ago that by now we'd be taking steps out of the COVID-19 restrictions and lockdown? To date, Australia has done brilliantly in flattening that curve. But I'm still holding my breath, as are all the health experts and most of our political leaders. The future still seems uncertain. So, how do we make our way back? And how are we going to manage lots of changes that are still ahead in life, health, work, families, and relationships? I'm in a Zoom conversation with the founder and director of the Resilience Centre, Lynn Worsley.
Lynn, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you back. So far, so good with COVID, but still much too early to claim victory, I think. In your mind, where are we now?
Okay, Lee, we're in the next phase of our curve. And as predicted, we've become accustomed to life in the lockdown. Yeah. So many things have changed. And as a nation, I think we've actually adapted really well.
Too right.
The reports have been incredible with so many positive stories to tell.
Yes, I know you've had a Stay Connected campaign going on at the Resilience Centre, mainly through social media. What have been some of the things you've found, maybe some of the surprises along the way?
Oh, it's been great. It's actually been fun to do it as well.
I bet.
But it's been great to see how people are responding, and they're sharing their ideas for connections during the pandemic. And so we were able to post some of those up as well. But some of the positive stories have been greater neighbourhood connections, people that they've not met before that they're connecting with. And then a lot of people are talking about connecting with Zoom, with families via Zoom.
We all know that.
Yes, and I've also just talked to a friend recently and they just had a trivia quiz on Zoom with a big family connection. So it was awesome.
Wonderful.
But their seniors are more connected as they're upskilling with their technical skills.
Yes.
There's a slower pace. People are happy with that.
Oh, yes, Lynn. I love it.
And families seem to be connecting a bit more when there's no weekend sport or after-school activities. I'm seeing a lot of bike rides, people riding with their dad and their mum on the bikes, a lot of fishing, families going for whole walks together in the evenings. And, you know, I think the toys are coming out, the adult toys as well as the children's toys.
Yes.
Apparently there's been a bit of a glut on people buying puppies and kittens.
As long as that continues after it.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of self-learning.
Yes.
So people have been getting online and learning more and a lot more self-reflection. I'm seeing people in the practice particularly who are saying they're having self-reflective conversations with their local friends. You know, like, how are you going? What's happening to you? What are you learning? How are you changing? Which is really lovely.
They've got the time and the space to both ask and listen, I suppose.
Yes. I think so. Yeah. I think, too, leadership on all levels is being tested and honed.
Hmm.
So we've certainly seen that in our political leadership, but we're seeing leadership challenged in organisations, in businesses, in families, and in communities. We're also having reports of people saying that they're much more organised. They're actually getting their things done. They're completing tasks.
Yes.
Most of the people in business that I've been talking to have said their tax accounting is up to date. That's mainly because they need to claim the benefits that are coming through, but that also has its benefits by having an up-to-date system and you can track where you're up to. People who go to church are going to church online, and if they're not going to their own church, they're going around different churches to hear and listen, listen in to what they're doing. And the churches are getting pretty clever with that.
Yes.
Which I think is really good. But not to mention the clear skies with less pollution, crystal clear water. There's less rubbish in the waterways and the harbour doesn't have as much rubbish. And the cities are much quieter
because
of the air traffic.
Yep. I came home from my morning walk yesterday and I said to my wife, not that I'm making this up, but I said, the air is so much clearer this morning. It was beautiful. It was about 7 o'clock in the morning. And I've never seen it so crystal clear. It's amazing. So I wonder whether we've kind of been lulled into a false sense of security and if we've begun to feel more and more safe, because by any measure, this has still got quite a while to run its course.
Yeah, I agree with you, Lee. I think we've been lulled into a smaller world. There's less people that we've got to be responsible for. So that means basically you know, we see less people. We only see those people who are closer to us, those people who are a bit like us. And so our psyche begins to assume that everyone is the same as me, everyone is safe. There's a bit of a danger in this as we lose sight of others who are different to us.
Okay, yeah.
There are many people who haven't coped well and many people that don't cope well with any lockdown. And these are our most vulnerable people. Those are the people who are normally quite socially isolated and they don't have the technical skills or the social skills to survive. These are the people who are not resilient when it comes to a global crisis.
Hmm.
So how are we going to be in a society to help these people?
It's a good question.
Now, many of our homeless have been housed, but there are many who've missed that process because they're not registered as being homeless or vulnerable.
So in your mind, here's the big question, what's next? So what's next for our society, for our communities, but also personally, relationally? Give us some Worsley wisdom on all that.
Our next set of tasks to negotiate the curve involves thinking through how to recover and rebuild a better world.
Yeah.
So this is our chance to develop our collective preferred future. It's our chance to become better people as a nation. But in order to become a better people, we need to think outside our safe hubs that we've created in order to feel safe. So if we really want to build a better world, we need to think through our response to the people we don't see. We don't see them because our own world has shrunk, because we've been told to do that.
People like who?
I can tell you stories of hoarders who've been locked in their houses without internet, mobile phones, and access to storage for food items.
Wow.
The shops are shut, and they just don't understand because they haven't heard the news reports.
Wow.
I can also tell you stories of the elderly who've got everything they need in their homes and they look after themselves quite well, but they don't have the internet connected, the family can't visit because of the risk of infection, and their services have been reduced or limited. So how do they order food or manage to get out when the shops are shut and they don't know that others are ordering online? They've got no idea.
Mm.
I can also tell you stories of people who've had past trauma where their lives were threatened and they hid to avoid being hurt. And the shutdown resembles their time of trauma and they've got flashbacks every time they hear a noise. And there's fear that if someone's coming to hurt them again any minute, they don't call out for help because that brings a risk for them. I can also tell you of stories who've had fixed routines and the shutdown changes so much of their lives that they become confused, threatened and angry. Their reactions push people away because they don't follow the right guidelines for hygiene. I can also tell you of the refugees who are here without any social security benefits and they're isolated from their own family and friends. They're fearing the loss of their own families in their home countries and they struggle to pay rental and buy groceries here.
I think this is certainly eye-opening and good for us to hear, Lynn. Our instinct is often to say, why isn't the government doing more about this or that? But I suppose a lot of what you're talking about can often be up close and personal to us as individuals if we've got eyes to see it, hear it.
Yeah. So it's how we respond to these situations in our own local neighbourhoods and communities that establishes a better world.
Yeah.
We can't wait for the government to find these people and look after them. And we can't wait for others to fix them. We have to work out ways we can support and care for the most vulnerable in our immediate communities. This is what makes a resilient nation. We're resilient only if we're reaching out and collectively supporting one another. One of the most sobering facts recently, though, was to hear that the refugee support group in the Blue Mountains has had a massive increase in donations, I think almost like 100% increase.
Wow.
Both financially and in the form of warm clothes, white goods and furniture. And people are digging deep to help. And it's not the rich that are doing this. It's the people who are also struggling.
Why do you say that's happening now? Such a response.
There's a sense that we're all in this together.
Okay.
If we start thinking about the people that are close to us in our little bubble, we look after those people, and the people that are close to us in our bubble is our next door neighbour or the old person up the road or the refugee around the corner. And the authorities are so busy with what they've already got, with those people who are already registered.
Yes.
We have to reach out. And this is what is so beautiful to see, that the compassion is starting to flow, that we're starting to see more and more people connecting to their local communities. But it just takes a little bit more fortitude to open our eyes and see who's missing. Where it helps to drop a meal around to the most difficult person in our midst. You won't be thanked, but they will need it.
Sure do, yeah.
It might be nice to send a letter of encouragement or a small card to someone who's locked in, or sending letters to people you know who don't have computers or mobile phones. Perhaps our next stage needs to be titled Reaching Out.
I just thought, imagine if everyone who listens to this podcast did just one of those things.
Yeah. Oh, lovely.
What a difference. If there was one particular story, the many areas that you listed before, to demonstrate both the needs but also the opportunities for us from here on, what would that be? What would that one story be, Lynn?
One of our receptionists recently was telling me a story about how she regularly made a meal for one of the local older people in her neighbourhood. And this older person's quite difficult and isn't terribly well liked, but nonetheless, she makes a meal for him, and she realised that this was the only meal that he'd had each week that was nourishing.
My goodness.
So the new normal was that that meal was part of their routine, the family routine for the week, and so someone from her house would go down and visit him and have a chat and deliver the meal. That's the reaching out that matters. It doesn't mean that you reach out to the people who are kind and nice and easy to get on with. It's usually the people who aren't so nice, who aren't easy to get on with, that are the most isolated because they haven't been able to socially navigate and negotiate people around them. These are the people we have to reach out for.
Of the probably hundreds of conversations we've had, I think this one's probably tugged at my heartstrings the most, actually. And again, imagine the difference that we can make when we've got a bit of space, when we've got a bit of time. Lynn, thanks so much indeed. It's been wonderful.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to another podcast in our coronavirus series from the Resilience Centre. I'm Lee Hatcher. Head to the website for more podcasts in this series and so many great resources, www.theresiliencecentre.com.au.